Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim. This is the RTC Weekly Download, where we feature old-time radio. We have an hour of it for you, as usual. Today, we're starting off with something called the Diary of Fate. This is kind of the fickle finger of fate, if you recall the old Laugh-In TV show, except it's serious. The finger of fate points at a certain person each week, and we hear how fate dealt with the guy. And now, from 1948, this is the Henry Portioff entry.
The Diary of Fate. Fate plays no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 82, page 216.
In the Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name Hendrik Potanoff. A man of singular purpose and great tenacity of will, who used these talents to bring about his own destruction. He had his choice, as have all mortals. And because of a literal thing, a letter he caused to be held up in delivery, Hendrik Potanoff came to know the real meaning of fate. His life record lies open before me, and for a moment, I, fate, look to a single horrible incident.
There, you lousy screw. I hope it killed you. I gotta move fast. Legs weak, awful dark. The door, it's a lock. Now we're up the incline. The sunlight, my eyes, it's blinding me.
Halt! Halt!
Hendrik, where are you, Hendrik?
Yes, Hendrik Potanoff, you had a choice, and your decision was for evil. Soon it will be time to write the final entry in the record of Hendrik Potanoff. And when I have written, I shall read from his page in The Diary of Fate. Of a prison, Hendrik Potanoff has been credited with 22 years of payment on his debt to society. He is scheduled to be paroled soon. But 7,000 nights have not bred repentance in his heart. 22 years of resentment at confinement are symbolized in his hate of Sarah Hetty.
If it hadn't been for Sarah refusing to testify that she was with me that night, if it hadn't been for Sarah's jealousy of Molly, if it hadn't been for Sarah.
Hey, Hendrik, what's your dream?
Yeah, I've been listening to that every night for nearly 21 years, but only 30 more times till I get out.
Like they're hearing the grief find he's bumped off his feet today, eh?
Yeah, dummy. Huh? You hear the bull coming to me.
15202.
Yeah.
Oh, Hendrik. No letter for you tonight.
Do I ever get letters?
I guess not. Too bad about Swede getting shot trying to escape today.
Sure, they come and go. Swede was only here 8 years. Hardly time for a shave and a haircut.
But if it hadn't
been for Sarah's love, if it hadn't been for Sarah Hedrick.
Yes, to Hendrik Potanoff, Even freedom meant only one thing. An opportunity for revenge on Sarah Herrick. His decision for evil was 3,000 times confirmed. Nightly he warmed his hate at memory's fire. Recalled again with bitter recrimination, a courtroom scene of more than 20 years before.
Chairman of the jury, you've heard the evidence against the defendant. You will now retire to the jury room and return when you have reached the verdict.
Why wouldn't she testify, Molly? Wouldn't she do that for you, her sister?
No. I got down on my knees and begged her.
Well, she could save my neck. If she'd tell them why I shot him and that she was with me.
Oh, she's jealous because you married me instead of her. She claims she stayed home alone that night.
Oh, she lies. That was the night I took her out purposely to break the news that you and I had got married.
Now she wouldn't admit it anyway. She just couldn't have been out with a man now being tried for murder. Only a week before she married John Hedrick, the banker.
She sure decided to marry him awful sudden.
She doesn't love him. She married him for spite after you married me.
She just admitted it was a stick-up. And that Carver threatened us while we were parked there. They'd call it justifiable homicide and I'd go free.
Even though they proved that you had trouble with Carver before?
Oh, sure, that was just a coincidence. He was just a cheap stick-up on him. He didn't know it was me in that car until he shoved his face through the window.
And once he'd seen that you had recognized him, then it was you or him.
Well, of course. I let him have it before he could drill me.
Oh, darling. You just hadn't driven her home before you reported to the police station.
Well, it seemed natural, though, because she was boiling madly already, and the shooting made her hysterical. I figured she'd corroborate my story when the time came.
She wouldn't. And especially not now. It would ruin her social position.
Her social position against a life sentence for me.
Hendrick, would it do any good to let people know about our marriage?
No, no, baby. What they don't know won't hurt. If I do take a rap, and they knew, you'd be labeled as the wife of a killer.
I wouldn't care, darling. Believe me.
I know it, Molly, but in case I am convicted, you can do me more good as the unmarried sister of the influential John Hedrick. Now, don't let anybody know about our marriage.
Well, then you think you will be convicted.
I'm afraid so. Without Sarah's story, the district attorney has made it look like a plain case of bad blood between us, with me taking Carter for a ride.
What can I do?
Just go on living with Sarah and John. Use your time and opportunity to work on her. And maybe someday, you can get her to listen to me.
I'll do it, darling. I'll do anything.
It'll be hard. It'll be hard on both of us. We won't be able to exchange letters.
Oh, no, darling. I've got to hear from
you. No, don't write. Pretend you've forgotten me. Otherwise, Sarah will always be jealous and never help.
I'll wait for you. Love you always.
A decade of fuel for Hendrick's hatred. While Hendrick Potanoff suffered his imprisonment, Sarah, too, had paid great penance. She had carried a guilt. But the tiny details that brought about the final humbling of her pride of circumstance were no mere coincidences. They were parts of a plan. A plan to set before Hendrick Potanoff an opportunity to overcome the sins of 20 years of hating.
Well, so you're my new cellmate, huh? My name's Hendrick. They call me Limpy. What's yours, Jim?
William. They call me Bill.
Glad to know you, Bill. Just arrived today?
Yeah. Hey, you can tell that by this shaved head.
Mm-hmm. They'll call you Fish till it grows out again. Sit down. I'll tell you a few things about your new boarding school.
Yeah?
A new man always gets the bottom bunk. You get up at 6, leave cells at 7, eat and work back in cells at 6. Lights out at 9. Baseball or church on Sunday, if you've made your task in the mill. 100 yards of good cloth. And then there's the two most important rules of all. The official rule, stop whatever you're doing and stand still when you hear one blast of a whistle.
Hey, what's that mean?
It's the gun blows only warning before they shoot. And they seldom miss.
And what's the second?
Our unwritten law. Don't be a stool pigeon.
Well, thanks for the advice. You've been here long?
Nearly 22 years.
That's a whole lot of time. I'm only 21 years old.
Well, I've had something to keep me occupied. What are you in for?
Me? Oh, hit and run. 1 to 5 years. It was really an accident, but I lost my head and drove off.
It was your first offense, or do you think your folks could have gotten you off on probation? You got a family?
Yeah. Just my mother and dad and Aunt Molly.
Molly? I knew a girl named Molly once. What's your dad do?
Well, he's a banker. Number one citizen in our town. That's why he couldn't go to bat to help me. Everyone in Milford would have said he used his pull to get me off just because I was his son. Mm-hmm.
You're from Milford?
Yeah.
You've got an Aunt Molly? And your dad's a banker? Bill, what's your last name?
Hattie. William Hattie. They call me Bill. My father's name is John and mother's name is Sarah.
Yes, Hendrik Potanoff. I, fate, made your path cross to give you a chance to prove yourself worthy of freedom. You have a choice for good or for evil. But if your decision be for evil, the end is certain. And now it is time for another entry. And when I have written, I will read from the record of Hendrik Potanoff in the Diary of Fate. Oftentimes, when atonement and punishment have balanced the scales, there is given a second chance. For evil done, payment is made in the coin of sorrow and pain that comes as surely as the dawn of tomorrow. The parole board believed your protestations, Hendrik Potanoff. You begged for one more chance. And now I, fate, intervene. A tiny twig, a gust of fitful wind, a letter unreceived. Sometimes mortal plans miscarry and themselves ensnare the plotters. If you, Hendrik Potanoff, were to become involved in a violation of the prison rules, your parole would be forfeit.
13202.
Here.
54629. Here. Oh, Limpy. Well, let's see. Here's a letter for... Hey, you, William Hedick?
Yes, sir.
You can't have mail.
What?
I've got a ducat for you from the captain's office.
Yeah, but...
All your privileges are suspended for 30 days for failing to make task this week.
Yeah, but there's some mistake. I did make task. I made 10 yards over task.
Don't argue, fish. An officer checked the yardage. You were 10 yards short of task. Now you better make it next week or you'll get 30 days in the hole. Solitary confinement, fish. Ask Limpy. He can tell you all about it.
Find a no good screw.
Hey, look. Listen to me. Don't worry about the hole. I'm the trusty gun. If you ever get sent there, listen for 3 taps on the ventilator. I'll talk to you through it. I'll tell you what to do, you sir.
Yeah, thanks, pal. I don't mind losing the other privileges. Yeah, but that letter. It was probably from Mom, and I.
I haven't heard from her since I got here.
Oh, that's tough. But look, Bill. Next week, you'll make 20 extra yards. Then you can go see the captain. He'll give you your privileges back. So you'll only have to wait a week to get your letter.
He will. Yeah, but how can I make 20 yards extra? I worked as fast as I could this last week.
Oh, leave it to me. My pal Tony is the head loon tender in the mill. Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
I asked her last week to help my pal Bill. Yeah. Now I want you to give him the works. Fix him up a lightweight shuttle and that small gear on his loom.
Yeah, but still, he's not still pigeon. If he's a pot villain, I'd lose my good time.
You'd lose your parole.
I'll vouch for Bill. You speed up his loom.
You're my pal, Hendricks. I'll fix him up.
You got me.
Yeah, Mike, they give him the weight. He gets the fastest loom in the mill. Real fast, huh? Make lots of yards.
William Headache?
I hear, sir.
I warned you last week. Here's a ducat for you from the captain's office. Says you ruined 120 yards of cloth, state property.
Yeah, but it was good cloth, honest.
It was all thin. High-speed shuttles and gears were found on your loom in violation of the regulations. Where'd you get them?
Well, I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
Okay, wise guy. I'll come back as soon as I finish my count. And you can tell me who speeded up that loom or be ready to go to the hole.
30 days in the hole. Limpy, I've heard men die of consumption down there, go crazy, get shot. What do I tell them, Limpy?
That depends on whether you're regular or stool pigeon. You can squeal on me and Tony and save yourself a month in the hole.
Yeah, but you'd lose your parole.
That's right.
Shh, quiet, he's coming back.
Well, Eddie, you made up your mind to be sensible and talk, or do you go to the hole?
I'm no stool pigeon, screw. Let's go.
Yes, Hendrik Potanoff narrowly escaped his own trap. But it is written that no man can forever escape the reaping of his sowing. Unnoticed and unheeded, the threads of circumstance bind him to a doom as certain as his plan is evil. To William's confidence in him, Hendrik Potanoff then added a second factor of influence. His was the only voice William would hear.
Oh, that's Limpy. Good old Limpy. He didn't forget me.
Bill. Bill. You hear me?
Yeah, old Limpy. Gosh, it's good to hear a voice. Okay, I guess. Just as well, there's nothing to do. Can't see. It's black dark. I can't stand up straight. Can't stretch out. I don't know how long I've been here. I'm awful hungry. No, nothing. Not even bread. Just water. But it's sore because they found a small knife in my trousers. I don't know how it got there. What can I do?
You have to stand up for your rights. When the screw comes with your water, cuss him up. Tell him they can't do that to you. Get
out.
Demand your food.
Sure. Hendrik. Don't go away, Hendrik.
Here's your water, wise guy. Pass out your bucket.
Now, you lousy screw, where's my food? You give me my food or I'll...
You're what? Threatening an officer, huh? Well, just for that, no water.
Hey, come back. Give me my water. Give me my food. Give me my food. Anything to get out of here.
Well, next time the guard opens your door, hit him over the head with your bucket. Hard. The outer door will be unlocked. Then run to the inner. I'll meet you up there. I know a way to get you on the wall. Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it.
Sunlight in my eyes. It's blinding.
Bolt! Bolt! Mm. Hey, Hendrick! Where are you, Hendrick? Hendrick!
Your plan was successful, Hendrick Potanoff. William Hedrick is dead. He made an easy target stumbling about in the blinding daylight. And no blame for William's death was attached to you by the prison authorities. But fate was waiting. Now the plan moved swiftly to its inevitable conclusion. And in a moment, I shall write the final entry on the page of Hendrick Potanoff in the Diary of Fate. For evil contains the seed of its own undoing. Perhaps a tiny thing, no greater than a sheet of paper. Before his death, and for fear that its contents would identify and set William on his guard against you, Hendrick Potanoff, you had arranged to prevent his receiving a letter. And now the delicate scales of justice were slowly nearing inevitable balance.
13202?
Yes.
Oh, Limpy, it's too bad about your cellmate. You sure look happy, though.
Well, why not? Tomorrow morning I go through the main gate, headed out.
Well, good luck. Put this letter for your ex-cellmate with the rest of his belongings, will you? They'll be picked up and sent to his family tomorrow. So long.
A letter for William Hedrick, probably from his dear mother. Warning him to beware of old acquaintance, Hendrick Potanoff. It's taken a long time, sir, but I'm here. Let's see what you have to say. Dear Bill, I'm convicted and sent to prison. Who knows and experience?
Your unfortunate, however, has given me the courage to write this letter. You are a man now, not a child. As you read this, please remember that anything I have done has been for your welfare. All of us have made mistakes. I had hoped that I would never have to tell you mine. But your need now is greater than my pride. When I was your age, I fell in love and secretly
married. What do you know? This isn't from Sarah.
My husband also was sent to prison. I've always loved him. I'm still waiting for the day he comes out in the hope that we can live our remaining years happily together.
She loves me. She's waiting for me.
He's got my revenge on Sarah.
I did, Mom.
I want you to find him and show him this letter. His name is Hendrick Potanoff. Having unjustly suffered much himself, I know he will guide and counsel you. But your time of punishment will not embitter you towards society. It will return you to me, a wiser, more tolerant man. What will you need? To save you a great handicap in life, you have been raised as Sarah's son. Only she and I have known that you are not. When you get out, perhaps the three of us can spend many happy years together. For I am your real mother, Bill. And Hendrick Potanoff is your father.
No, I didn't do it.
It can't be true. He was my son. Mine and Molly's. And I killed him, my own son. I didn't know it. It wasn't my fault. It was Sarah's fault. She made me kill him. If it hadn't been for Sarah. Get away from me, Sarah Haddock. You're the devil. You tricked me. Fate tricked me. Get off that boat, Sarah.
Hey, you, Hendrick. Put that stool down. What the matter with you? You blowing your top?
Get her out of here, sure. I'll kill her.
Step out of it, Limpy. There's no one in there with you.
You trying to get me? Don't you think I can see her? Sitting right there. She made me kill Bill, my son.
Listen, you screwball. Bill wasn't your son, and he was just trying to escape. You didn't have anything to do with it. Now put that stool down, dummy.
I wouldn't have killed him if it hadn't been for you, Sarah. You made me do it, and now I'm going to beat your brains out. Now I'm going to kill you.
Hey, that boy! Hey, that boy! Okay, boys. Go ahead, bring the great jack. I'll grab him. Now watch yourself. Put down that stool, Hendrick. Grab him, boys!
Yes, Hendrick Potanoff will pay for his crime in the still-closed prison of a padded cell. For the rest of his life, he will each day scream in terror of his new cellmate, who will be with him always. A cellmate who cannot be paroled nor killed. For with fate has he created his own nemesis, an invisible, implacable, everlasting tormentor, fear. Now it is time to close the book. In the case of Hendrick Potanoff, as in the cases of all mortals, I, fate, am but the instrument of a plan. The little things that pass unnoticed are my instruments. You do not recognize my hand in this, and that is well. So, when the time for decision is at hand, ponder long and carefully. And remember, there is a page for you in the Diary of Fate.
This is a Larry. The cast included Herbert Litton, Burl Wallace, Howard McNear, Barney Phillips, Irvin Lee, Ray Erlenborn, Ivan Ditmars, and Hal Sawyer. Diary of Fate is a Larry Finley transcription, brought to you from Hollywood.
The Diary of Fate's a book you do not want to see your name in, believe me. Now it's time for a little comedy to lighten the mood. We're going to Duffy's Tavern for maybe not a drink, but maybe a few laughs. This is called The Singing Detective, and it features Rudy Vallee. This is from 1951.
Duffy's Tavern, starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner. And now, here we go, friends, to Duffy's Tavern, with Burt Gordon as the Mad Russian, Hazel Shermett as Miss Duffy, our guest, Rudy Vallee, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Duffy's Tavern, where do you late meat to eat? Archie the man just speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. How's business? The place is overflowing. Yep, the sewer's busted again. Yeah. Which reminds me, Rudy Vallee's coming down tonight. Rudy Valley. Well, remember the time you bought your first radio and when you turned it on, you know, you thought there was something wrong with it? Yeah, that's the guy. And how'd he get started? Well, he studied for 8 years before he found out he couldn't sing. By then it was too late to stop. Yes, sir, and he turned out to be very successful.
Did he what? Did he save his money? Stuffy, did you hear that? Even the operator's laughing.
Duffy, at Yale, they used to have a song called Bula Bula. Since Valley went there, they call it Mula Mula. Well, look, I'll call you back. I'm busy writing a new radio show for Rudy.
Yes.
Hey, Miss Duffy.
Yes, Archie.
I wonder if Rudy will be happy here tonight in our creaky old joint.
Why not? He's a little creaky in the joints himself.
Duffy, you're talking about the Rudy Valley.
Rudy Valley? Who's he? A sober Phil Harris.
Duffy, please, have a little reverence for the departed. Don't forget, a guy like Rudy Valley gives us prestige here. Take a look at this menu I wrote up for the occasion.
Let me see it. Today only, the Rudy Valley Blue Plate. Connecticut Yankee pot roast, vagabond liver, New England ham.
Yeah, it's boiled ham.
How do you know what condition he'll be in when he gets here?
Stuffy, Rudy never gets in that condition, too.
Say, Archie, a man just came in and dropped a penny in the peanut machine.
So what?
I think it must be Rudy Valley.
Well, why do you think it's Valley?
He's counting the peanuts.
That's right, it is Rudy Valley.
My time is your time.
Well, Rudy, I'm glad to see you. Look at you. I can see that you're the same old Rudy.
What do you mean?
Well, the way you came in singing, so generous and unstinting with your talent, you know, singing for all mankind. Whether they want to hear you or not.
A dubious compliment.
Well, dubious is it, dubious does. And, may I further say that you are looking as handsome as ever, and golden curly locks, and that svelte, youthful figure, and them svelte eyes. By the way, speaking of them eyes of yours, Rudy, which side of the 38th parallel was you born on?
Archie, I shall ignore your insults. May I further say that you are the same old Archie?
That's a lousy insult.
Say, Archie.
Yeah?
I'd like to meet Rudy Valley.
Well, why the sudden interest? You've been saying that you're young enough to be his daughter.
So what? With Rudy Valley, anybody young enough to be his daughter is old enough to be his wife.
Well, okay, I'll introduce you. Rudy, I know you came down here tonight to enjoy yourself, but this is Miss Duffy.
Looks like a Harvard man.
Gee, just imagine. Rudy Valley in person.
That's right, my dear. You may now faint.
Oh, thank you. Rudy Valley, that voice, those nostrils. Still the signs to dear old maid, shot so the rift is reeking.
Why, Miss Duffy, I didn't think you were old enough to remember the Maine Stein song.
Are you kidding? This dame remembers the Maine.
Mr. Valley, last week I wrote to NBC for a picture of a star. Guess what?
What?
They sent me a picture of you.
Oh, framed?
I sure was. I wanted Cary Grant.
Miss Duffy, I am now going to say something to you that I've never said to a woman before.
Oh, really? What?
Scram.
If it wasn't for his age, I'd punch him right in the nose.
Get out of here, will you?
No, Archie. I assume that you had an ulterior motive in requesting my presence here tonight.
On the contrary, I did. Rudy, I got a great opportunity for you to make...
Money?
Well, it could run into it fast, but first tell me, how's your voice this century?
Oh, about the same as last.
Well, I got a radio program in mind that...
Would you like to hear me sing?
How avid. Well, yeah, go ahead. Let me hear how you sound these days.
Very well.
Terrific, Rudy. Still the same old valley.
I haven't sung yet.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'll give you the key.
All right. If you were the only girl in the world, and I were the only boy, nothing else would matter in this world today. We could go on loving in the same old way. A garden of Eden just made for two, with nothing to mar our joy. I would say such wonderful things to you. There would be such wonderful things to do if you were the only girl in the world and I were the only boy.
Bravado, sheer bravado. No, you sounded just like Carmen Lombardo.
Another dubious compliment.
That's what Carmen Lombardo said. But for radio, you know, just singing is old hat these days. You gotta augment it up with something else. You gotta be a singing cowboy or a singing disc jockey or a singing commercial, you know. That's where I got an idea for a frightening mystery. You are going to be a singing detective.
A singing detective?
Yep, sort of a combination Thin Man and Margaret Truman. As I told you, Rudy, it'll be really frightening.
But what about a sponsor?
Stop worrying. Duffy will sponsor it.
What about a script?
Stop worrying. It's already wrote.
Who wrote it?
Me.
It will be frightening.
Stop worrying, will you?
What about the salary?
Rudy, start worrying. Now, okay, everybody. We're going to do a rehearsal of the first episode of The Hummer. By the way, Howard Hull, you're the announcer here. I'd like you to read the commercials.
Oh, joy.
Now, with these commercials, you have to be subtle about them and kind of sneak them in.
Sneak them in?
Yeah. Okay, we're on the air. Ladies and gents of the radio audience, Duffy's Tavern brings you The Hummer, starring Rudy Valley.
My crime is your crime.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Suckers.
Thank you. See the way they sneak them in? Now, we begin. I, Archie, am the Hummer's assistant. Him and me is a couple of private eyes, but we never cross each other. We are in our office, and the Hummer is sitting at his desk. Before him is a book of poetry and a bottle.
The book is unopened. I speak. I say, Hummer, why don't you lay off of that poetry?
I can't help it. Me nerves is on edge. Why, I ain't the man I used to be. Archie, this grammar.
What's wrong with it?
The word ain't.
Look, Rudy, a lot of people ain't using the word ain't, but they ain't eating. Now, continue. Now, we're sitting in our office when suddenly... Just a second. Hummer, what was that ring?
The telephone.
What a deduction. The man is positively psychopathiatric. Hello? What? Somebody's been murdered? Okay, we'll be right over. Let's go, Hummer.
What's the address?
Gazoops, I forgot to ask. Hello? Where? Oh, thanks. All right, leave us go, Hummer. Well, sir, we arrived at the scene of the crime. A mansion in Beverly Hills. Rococo, but simple. With a well-kept 9-hole golf course on a small island in the middle of the swimming pool. We rang the doorbell. Suddenly, the door creakingly opened, and we found ourselves face to face with something real sinister. How do you do? Tell me, sir, who are you?
I am Rasputin, the Chinese butler.
Well, I guess that clears you. Tell us, Rasputin, where is the late demented corpse?
There on the floor, the dead one. Oh. He's my master, Mr. Throckmorton. Forgive him for not rising.
Well, Hummer, leave us examine the corpus delicti. Mm-hmm. Looks to me like he took poison internally.
Poison? Poison? Then how do you account for this large ice pick stuck in his back?
Hummer, you're a genius. Hummer, you're humming. Hummer, does this mean that you have found a clue?
Yes. Archie, remove your hat.
Why, is the dead man a woman?
No. He was a Yale man.
Amazing, Hummer. How can you tell that he was a Yale man?
Elementary, my dear Archie. Notice his attire. A derby hat and a raccoon coat.
Gazooks. As I see it, there's only one thing to do. Examine the ice pick.
What ice pick?
The one stuck in his back.
Oh, that one.
Just a minute, gentlemen. Before you examine the ice pick, I should like to wipe off my fingerprints.
A fair request.
One moment, my good man. Who are you?
Hummer, it's Rasputin, the Chinese butler that answered the door when we came in.
Oh, yes. I never forget a face.
Tell me, Rasputin, before the murder was committed, did you notice anything strange around the house?
Outside of me?
Yes.
Well, this morning, Mrs. Throckmorton, the widow, sent me out to have the ice pick sharpened. And as I am leaving, she is phoning the insurance company.
Words, words, words. We are looking for clues.
Think.
Think, my good man. Something unusual must have happened.
Well, let me see, let me see. The widow also sent me out for a sort of shotgun and a bottle of poison.
Ah, this is getting us no place. No clues, no suspects. And yet I am sure that a crime has been committed.
I agree with you, Hummer. There's something afoot. What do we do, Hummer?
We'll question the widow, Throckmorton.
Gazooks, what a brain. Never leaves a dame unturned.
And here comes Mrs. Throckmorton now.
Hello,
curly and nasal. Glad you could come up and see the body.
Tell me, are you thinking, Hummer?
Yes, but back to business. Widow Throckmorton, allow me to introduce myself. I am the Hummer, tracker of men.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Mrs. Throckmorton, there's probably nothing to be alarmed about, but we have found your husband extremely dead. With an ice pick in his back. Mrs. Throckmorton, you realize what I'm saying? Your husband has been cruelly murdered.
Eek!
Mrs. Throckmorton, I hope you don't mind if we interrogate you.
No, I'd love it.
Well, tell me, Mrs. Throckmorton, before you married your husband, what did you do for a living?
I was a chorus girl. I was known as Ice Pick Nellie.
And why did they call you Ice Pick Nellie?
Well, I don't know. Just a nickname.
Nothing but blind alleys.
Oh, butler,
you are calling me...
Who are you?
The butler.
Oh, yes, I never forget a face. Tell me, do you know who killed your master?
Natch.
You do? Well, tell us.
You think I'm a tattletale?
Butler, you mean...
I'm dummying up.
There's something suspicious about this whole thing. It gets bafflinger and bafflinger.
I've got it. I think I know we can find a clue.
Where can we find a clue, Hummer?
At Yale University.
Why, of course. It's obvious. Shall we go?
As the last rose of summer said to the other last rose of summer, leave us wither away.
Okay, leave us wither away.
Friends, if you want to wither away, eat at Duffy's Tavern. And... and be sure to try our steaks. The club steaks are personally clubbed by the manager. And now, back to our story.
And so we arrived at Yale University, where the Hummer came face to face with his old dean. The dean spoke.
How do you do?
A dizzy dean.
Dean, I regret to report that old Throckmorton, class of 1861, has been seriously murdered.
You don't mean...
Yes, Dean, but he was a true Yale man to the end. He died with his derby and his raccoon coat on.
Good for Throckmorton. At last he had made skull and bones. Tell me, what happened to him?
An ice pick in the back. And, Dean, we thought you might know who killed him.
I'll tell you who killed him. It was... who? I'm dummying up.
And so, once again, history repeated itself. The Hummer learned nothing at Yale. So, we continued our search for clues from one end of the globe to the other. India, New Zealand, Hialeah, Asia Minor, Far Rockaway.
Hialeah.
We even went to Antwerp and talked to the twits. It was in Antwerp that we discovered that the ice pick was manufactured in Norway. This meant only one thing. Argentina. While we were sitting in a cafe in Argentina, a few strolling pampers came in and began to sing an old opera tune. Howard, an old opera tune.
Friends, I'd like to take this opera tune moment to tell you about the drinks at Duffy's Tavern. Remember, a drink at Duffy's is good for your stomach. Ask the man who had one. Now, back to our play.
And so we continued our search. From Stockholm to Oslo. From the Skagerrak to the Kattegat. Then, suddenly, the hummer started humming. This could only mean one thing. Scotland. The next morning, we found ourselves in the heart of Scotland. Scotland Yard itself. We was greeted by Inspector McIntyre.
How do you, Hootman?
You are a Scotchman?
In this sky, do you think I'm playing Little Lever?
Oh, I'm sorry, Inspector. We have no time for frivolities. We're looking for clues.
Well, you've got a bro, brech, mulech, necht, necht, tulkacht, recht. What sort of clues, Hootman, are you looking for?
Inspector, we're looking for the cad who murdered a Yale man in his old raccoon coat.
Was this Yale man wearing a derby hood?
Aye.
Is he having an ice pick in his back?
Aye. Do you ken anything about the case?
I'm dumbing up.
And so the search went on. We left Scotland and sailed for Juneau, Alaska.
Juneau? About the food at Duffy's Tavern? Just ask the man who's been there. He'll tell you where to go.
Thank you, Howard. And we continue. After many months of fruitless search, we returned to America and the Throckmorton Mansion. The butler spoke.
How do you... Hey, it's you again.
This man is decently familiar. Archie, who is he?
Hummer, don't you remember? It's Rasputin, the butler.
Oh, yes. I never forget a face.
Rasputin, is there any new clues?
Only one. Yesterday, we had some highballs, and we had to use the ice pick, but don't worry. We stuck it right back into Mr. Throckmorton.
Just a second.
Quiet, everybody. The hummer is thinking. There may be a solution to this crime yet.
Europa, the solution. I have it.
What is it, Hummer?
Archie, take the corpse's fingerprints.
Okay. Wait. Hummer, the corpse has no fingers. Only claws. What does this mean?
Archie, remove his derby hat. Yank out the ice pick and tell me what you see.
Gazoops, it ain't a Yale man at all. It's only a polar bear rug. Hummer, does this mean...
Yes. There is no Mr. Throckmorton. There is no body.
You mean...
It was a perfect crime that was never committed.
Hummer, you're a genius. Well, Rudy, tell me, what'd you think of it as a radio play?
What do I think of it?
Yeah. Rudy, no. Rudy, stop humming at me that way. I know what you're thinking. Rudy, put down that ice pick. Rudy.
Bewitching next week.
It's time to leave Duffy's Tavern for now, but be sure to be with us again next time for another hilarious get-together at everybody's favorite tavern.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.